Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 32, Episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For May 21st, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Union Jack, because I had a very British weekend, in which I both was randomly up for the royal wedding, thanks to my 11-week-old, and then started watching the Great British Baking Show, courtesy of a underrated from one of our guests who, I think it was Teresa Lee.
Maybe. Who was someone who was just saying, if you want to escape the chaos of our
world,
just watch the nicest show.
Like, everyone's so nice.
That sounds like Teresa.
Yeah.
They like just hug the shit out of the people who they have just kicked off the show.
Right. And for like, for like us
like,
as a
you're going to be great.
Competition reality shows, you're used to like, they needed help and I said fuck off so they would lose. And here, like, they're so willing to help each other. Anyway,
they're like, actually, I am sort of here to make friends.
Right, yeah.
And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Oh, hello, it's Monday. It's Miles Gray, aka happy birthday to ANNA Hosnier. That's right, Sue Perdue, Anna Hosnier, or Anna, if you're Jack or her family, is celebrating her 19th birthday today. And, you know, shout out to you. Live your best life out there. It looks like you're having a good time in Seattle on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Doing some obscure golf tournament that you'll have to explain to me when I see you in person.
Is she a golfer?
No, I think this is just like a fun joke gag thing, because clearly there was no golf going on and just drinking. So,
okay.
Yeah, but hey, Anna, if you're listening, and I know you're not, because you work here every day, happy birthday, and yo, send some love Anna's way. It's her birthday.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the all-time greats.
No, if not the.
The all-time great podcast guest and one of the funniest stand-up comedians just I've ever seen in person. She is Jamie Lofton.
Hi.
Hey.
What's up?
What's up?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. It's like, it's crummy out. I love it.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I like it.
Overcast. There's like a little
There were some people
mist.
In town from England that I met over the weekend, and they were really disappointed that they were like, the weather is technically actually better in London right now than in LA, and we're really bummed about it. I was like, well, look, it's Earth.
I'm like amping myself up today. I'm wearing like all my favorite clothing items to just like pull up the vibe.
Yeah.
And it's working.
You got the booyah.
So much. I got my booyah shirt. I got my Ted Kaczynski sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Unabomber sweatshirt. So,
my
that you wore to, I think you said, jury duty once?
I wore to jury duty. They did not like it.
No. With
it's a, it's a straight up standard Harvard sweatshirt with the Unabomber drawing underneath it because Harvard literally created the Unabomber. Oh. If you don't know the origin story of that, there was a brutal psychological study that they did on Harvard students back in 1959, Ted Kaczynski's freshman year. And basically what they 16 did...
16 years old.
Yeah, they basically asked them to explain their sort of philosophy on life and their views on the world. Ted Kaczynski was this like really, you know, sheltered 16-year-old who was just like being around people for the first time, just like this brilliant like prodigy. And then the object of the experiment was to, they had Harvard law students then tear their arguments apart.
Oh my God.
And just like basically destroy their whole world and then bring them back and show them a video of their world being destroyed over and over again and then measure their stress levels. And they specifically have in their notes, wow, this one person was completely off the charts in terms of how anxious this made him.
Right.
And it was Ted Kaczynski.
Jesus.
Harvard, thank
how
you very
that
much.
How is that a study? You're like, come in and we're just going to read you down to filth.
Right.
And your whole worldview. You'll come out of here feeling that like you're just meaningless.
Yeah.
And you're 16.
The story of the guy who designed the study is crazy. He's like just straight up supervillain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Tight. Yeah.
Shout out to Harvard.
Yeah.
Or
good work, Harvard.
Or when people, whenever you meet people who go to Harvard, they never say they go to Harvard. They went to Harvard.
I went to school in Boston.
Boston.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Where? It's like a school in Cambridge.
Always a red flag. Yeah. When I'm like, oh, I'm from Boston. They're like, oh, I went to school there. It's like, stay away. Stay
yeah.
away.
Yeah. Just don't ask any further questions. It'll drive them fucking crazy.
Although, you know, I got some Harvard homies. They're chill.
Yeah.
There's a group of them. But then there's also, I guess there's like two, I don't know how many Harvard alums I interact with, but I've met distinct groups. Like they're the kind who are real coy about it. And the people are like, look, I went to Harvard. Look, it's not a big deal. Okay, let's.
But then there's like the reverse people who like straight up didn't go to Harvard, but they use the same inflection to say they went to school in Boston.
And
like,
then
they're
they
like,
went
I
to
went
BU.
To school in Boston.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh really?
Where?
Yeah.
They're like, Suffolk University. Like, yikes, pretty embarrassing for you. You're just as in debt as a Harvard grad. Your school sucks.
Super producer Nick Stumpf has a theory that people who went to Harvard never listen to a single thing that you say. Like if you have a conversation with them, it's just like as you are talking, they're just thinking of the next thing they're going to say.
Right.
It's such a great theory.
So they turn into Handsome Dan.
True.
Handsome Dan from Wayne's World 2, Harry Shearer.
Wait, mm-hmm. Handsome Dan?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I used to have, wait, are you serious? Is Handsome Dan the name of a fictional character?
Yeah, Handsome Dan is the radio DJ that in Wayne's World 2, when they go to promote Wayne Stock,
they first go
in and they think they're meeting Handsome Dan and it's actually Ted, whatever his name is, from Married with Children. They think he's Handsome Dan. He's actually the guy who screams and then they get in the studio and it's gross Harry Shearer.
There was a DJ at my college and that I had a huge crush on who went by Handsome Dan and I thought it was his idea and I had such a big crush on Handsome Dan and I changed my major and I got a radio degree.
No.
Shout out to
you
Handsome
did?
Dan.
Because
no wonder you're such a podcast legend.
Yeah.
You are classically trained in the art of radio.
If I hadn't had a crush on Handsome Dan.
And part of the mystique of Handsome Dan was like, what a brilliant name that he just ripped off from Wayne's World 2.
I literally thought, I was like, wow, he's so confident. And
was there also a guy who screamed, whose co-host just went, hey! Was that part of it too?
Oh, no, okay. It was boring.
Was he a handsome man named Dan?
He was a handsome man for a radio DJ.
Right. Hey.
He was, and no
face
one was
for
a
radio,
for,
huh?
No, he was cute. He was my crush. And then I, like with many of my crushes, I just changed the direction of my life based on Handsome Dan.
Good a reason as any, I say. Jamie.
Yeah.
What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Well, just before you guys came downstairs, I was looking up
because we record in a basement.
We are beneath a Zumba studio right now.
Right.
I looked up Carney Blog 2008.
Yeah.
Because there was this, I was thinking about it this morning, there was this old blog I used to read when I was in high school of a carnival worker named Kevin who had just decided to like leave the carnival forever. And he would post on his Blogspot account, whenever he was on a Greyhound bus that had Wi-Fi, because I think he had like, he must have had like a big clunky laptop, because I'm pretty sure 2008 is pre-netbook, but he had some way of posting, and he would post maybe once a month. And then in October 2008, he posted the saddest thing I've ever read about a lost love of his. And then went off the grid, and you can't find anything about him now.
Oh, no.
I know.
Did you find the blog?
I found the blog.
It's still up?
Yeah.
So he's still, like, paying the server costs? Or
is
it like a Blogspot kind of thing?
A Blogspot, I think, is eternal.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just like a free account.
Hell yeah, Blogspot.
It's like Google just owns it.
A lot of websites, though, just, you know, like GeoCities and shit. Like,
right.
And a lot of places that people used to put up work have, like, gone down.
Oh, yeah. My Angel Fire website of just The Rock GIFs, gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it's still up, diaryofacarny.blogspot.com. I also looked up this weekend organ transport, like an organ instrument. Because my great uncle hit me up. We talk about once a year. He's like, hey, I'm making my will. He's very old. He's like, I'm making my will, and I'd like to give you my organ because you're my only you're my only relative in California.
I bet you got a lot of a lot of things about carrying people's livers in boxes of ice.
Yeah, and then my conclusion was you're just going to have to get a U-Haul, and then I'm going to have an organ.
Right.
Which is, so hopefully
do you know what kind of
he
organ
never
it
dies.
Is a Hammond B3?
No, it's like a weird, it's kind of like a haunted looking organ. It's like an electronic.
It's made of infidel bone.
It's a keyboard cat organ where my great uncle's basically blind and he purchased an organ. And
oh, he's not an organist by trade?
No.
Oh.
No, he just decided, you know, he's like,
I like this even more.
I'm old, I want an organ, I can't see the organ. And so it's one of those organs where you can, it's like electronically programmed and you can press any button and it'll just start to play like a famous song.
You could flare piano organ?
Yeah. It's a really...
Oh, that's dope.
That's awesome.
You just bring... Like, incorporate that in your act and be like, now I'm going to play some organ, and you're going to look like a prolific
organist.
This
goes out to Uncle Dick.
Organs are notoriously difficult to move, aren't they?
They're gigantic.
Things. Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully Uncle Dick lives forever and we don't have to deal with this organ.
Yeah. Okay. This all has a very Teddy Perkins Atlanta episode vibe to it.
Ooh.
Yeah, you should watch that if you haven't. All right, Jamie, what is something that is overrated?
Overrated, because I haven't been here in a while, I will say overrated, trying to negotiate détente with your enemies in real life, because I was stood up by Swole Sauce about almost a month ago now.
Yeah, last time you were about to possibly meet face-to-face with Swole Sauce, and it did not go down.
No, he totally stood me up. He said, he asked for the specific time, specific location. I was ready.
Do you have comps for him?
I have saved him a seat.
Okay.
And I was telling people at the show, there's this guy coming and his name is Swole Sauce and we have some business to discuss. So if I don't,
if I don't do any stand up tonight, I apologize.
Like, it might be more of a dialogue tonight. We don't know. Made this big deal of it. And he did not show. And then I messaged him like, Swole Sauce, what the fuck happened?
That's my favorite text ever.
And he was just like, sorry, couldn't do it. And then I blocked his ass.
I think we just need to immortalize that bubble from your text conversation that you posted, where it just says,
what he responded.
Swole Sauce, what the fuck?
His response was like,
furious.
Was really annoying because it was almost like self mythologizing. He was like, you can't hold down the Swole
Sauce
or something. It was like he had been listening and was in on the joke.
Yeah, I said, Swole Sauce, where the fuck were you?
Swole Sauce, where the fuck were you?
And he was just like, sorry, couldn't make it, blah, blah, blah. And then so, you know, trying to make good with someone who insulted you on the internet, turns out not as good an idea as I originally thought.
Right, yeah.
Overrated.
Yeah. All right.
So despite what mental health professionals tell you, you should not go after people who say mean things about you on the internet and try and become their friends.
I was really hoping to lift that stigma, and turns out I was wrong.
You should write a book about it. Embracing My Trolls by Yami Lofty.
By Yamu Loftu.
What is something that is underrated?
Underrated, I would say, is burying your pets. Once they die, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Not while they're living.
Okay.
I buried my hamster this weekend after 6 months of leaving it in my freezer because
I was going to say, like, when I saw you post about that, mm-hmm. I thought it was another hamster that died, not the one that was just in cryo sleep.
That's bleak. Yeah, no, it was hamster OG. Uh-huh. My roommate unfortunately found it in the decoy jack-in-the-box bag I had left it in. Thought it was leftovers. Actually a corpse.
You had a fucking hamster corpse? Wait, I mean, I knew it was in the freezer, but I didn't realize you put in a fucking jack-in-the-box bag. So someone just thought, oh, Jamie's just really holding on to this sourdough jack club sandwich.
Yeah,
or
you can't let go.
You knew that your roommate would not approve of having a dead hamster, and that's why you hid it in the jack.
Yeah, okay. I didn't want anyone to be like, oh, yeah, there's a corpse next to our ice cream all the time. Mm-hmm.
I can
there
see
was.
How that's a reasonable fear.
She was, I mean, and honestly, if I found, I would kick me out of the home, but she was very nice about it. Aww. She was just like, hey, is this yours? And at first I was like,
of course, of all
yours.
The-
I was like, I was so close to saying no, but I said yes.
You went, yes.
Like, there's no way out of this one, Loftus. Right. So I buried it. And I also, so I don't know. I feel like a coyote's probably dug it up and eaten it by now.
Wait, I have a question. Did you just have just the hamster just in a paper bag, or was it in another bag and then in a paper bag? Or you just straight up just like put in this jack-in-the-box bag and threw it in
the
freezer?
No, I'm a tender pet owner.
Okay.
I put the hamster in the ball, sealed the ball, put the ball in the jack-in-the-box bag, folded it over like it was a cheeseburger or something, and then launched it into the back of my freezer.
Oh, so you didn't even like air seal the thing? So it was, I guess, before it had a chance to decompose. Like,
this did not
decompose
even a little bit.
Wow. So you feel like you now have closure on your relationship with your hamster?
Yeah, I do feel bad that I dug such a shallow grave, but I was busy that day.
Wait, how shallow?
How deep should a grave
technically
be?
Technically, what's burying? If you just put dirt on it, it's buried, right?
Well, I brought a tablespoon to the park in broad daylight, and I dug, I would say, maybe an 8-inch hole, and then just... rolled it in there, tapped. There was like people on a date watching me, like, this is really sad.
I hope you were wearing your Unabomber shirt too.
So I don't know. I think that it was probably too shallow a grave. But again, I was busy that day, so didn't really have time to dig a full grave.
Did you know real graves, like most graves, are only 4 to 5 feet deep?
It's What's with all this 6 feet under stuff?
It's just
wait, 4 to 5 feet?
Overcompensating.
Yeah.
Why is that?
3 to 4 in some cases. I don't know.
Like
just,
like
as
a formal
deep as
grave?
They need to go, I guess.
Maybe it's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, did you go 3 to 4 feet?
No. I went 8 inches, and then my spoon wasn't reaching much deeper than that. So then
let's say also underrated, shallow graves. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. mostly we only talk about them you're like disposing of a body in the mm-hmm. woods, but
get your lie out.
Yeah, but sometimes you just need a busy person on the move needs to dig a shallow grave.
Are you a busy woman on the go? Are you a career woman? Don't waste your time digging a deep grave. Dig a shallow grave.
Right. It's just implied that you have dead things to get rid of.
Do it on the way to work. That's what I did.
Jamie, what is something that's a myth that people think is true that, based on experience, you know to be false?
Something that is a myth that I've been thinking about recently, because my dad was arguing it on the phone the other day, was that he thought snowplows had a greater cultural impact than Zambonis.
Hmm.
We sparred about this the other day on the phone.
Wow.
I know.
Hmm. Now, I guess because snowplow does involve most people who have a commute in areas where there's snowfall, correct? Was that part of his argument? And Zamboni's limited to ice sports?
His argument was more about the ubiquity of snowplows. And he's like, well, things can't happen unless snowplows are doing their job. There's more death attached to the idea of a snowplow. There's more, you know, whatever. There's more characters in film based around snow. For instance, snowplow guy from the movie Snow Day.
Right.
but I would argue that Zambonis take the cape because they're iconic. They're a brand.
Uh-huh. Right. Are they a brand?
They are a brand.
Oh, I did not know that.
They're a family that live in California.
Yep. Fucking, in that's Paramount. Amazing.
Isn't that wild?
Invented by Frank Zamboni.
Mr. Yes. Frank Zamboni.
And it sounds like a joke, but it's guy's name is Frank Zamboni.
There's Leotard is the same deal? Named after the inventor of leotards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, the Zamboni website rules. It says accept no substitutes. It's like, you know what? No one's going to. Yeah, so I would always argue that Zamboni is...
You know what it is? When you go to Zamboni, it goes, nothing else is even close.
Oh, wait, it's even more aggressive. Sinister. Yeah.
Even nothing is even fucking close.
There's only one Zamboni, and that's why I think it has greater cultural impact, despite what my dad says. So the myth that snowplows are more culturally relevant, busted.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably a Simpsons episode about it, because there was like the Mr. Plow Simpsons episode where it was about, anyway, look, we don't have to get into
I'm triggered by a plow talk.
I think, okay, so just going off of Google searches, snowplows, when you search snowplow, 35 million results. When you search Zamboni, 6.9 million results. However, I would say that you can't compare something with such a utilitarian name as snowplow. That's just like what it is.
Yeah.
To the most fun word we have adopted from Italian. Yeah. Like, that is the best word.
That's like if you're saying like, well, if I look up the word person, I get a billion results. If I look up the name
Frank
Jack
Zamboni.
O'Brien, I get far less. But, you know, there's a more specific. But who's more impactful than all
me
people?
Me or the human race? Me. Exactly.
Maybe
I
I'm
love
wrong.
That metaphor and we are moving on. All right, let's get into what people are thinking and talking about right now around the world and in America, more specifically. At the end of last week, there was another shooting in Santa Fe High School in Texas. And yeah, we're just another round of the debate that is getting pretty.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Like, as I was just kind of writing about this up for us to talk about, how, like, I was kind of taking a flippant angle or just. I think it just speaks to sort of the exhaustion that we have, that we're still just in this fucking cycle of shooting and then dumbass finger pointing of anything but the fucking guns. Anything but that. Last time it was, I don't even know what it was. The new talking point, it seemed like, on all the Sunday shows, because the NRA had to get all their people out to start spinning this recent shooting to be anything but the guns, seemed to be mostly video games and movies now was like the... I guess scapegoat du jour.
And Ritalin. Right.
And Ritalin, yeah. Yes. So I guess the
Ritalin
first up.
Ritalin was a new one.
Yeah, Ollie North, who is the new NRA president and OG gun smuggler of America. Right. Mm-hmm. He went on Fox and, blamed Ritalin and a bunch of others. Yeah, check out this explanation.
We're trying like the Dickens to treat the symptom without treating the disease. And the disease in this case isn't the Second Amendment. The disease is youngsters who are steeped in a culture of violence. They've been drugged in many cases. Nearly all of these perpetrators are male, and they're young teenagers in most cases. And they've come through a culture where violence is commonplace. All we need to do is turn on a TV, go to a movie. If you look at what has happened to the young people, many of these young boys have been on Ritalin since they were in kindergarten.
That's such a hard left on, like, it's like he even... started like making a good point of like all these young shooters are male, all these young, like,
right, that there could be a discussion about what toxic masculinity is and things like that,
right? But then it turns into a Ritalin. It's just
ridiculous. Later on he goes, well, look, I'm not a doctor, I'm a Marine,
right?
So blah blah blah, and it's almost like, well, then don't fucking begin to speculate as to what Ritalin has to do with any of this. So anything but the guns. And then it seemed like this was kind of a theme, because then the lieutenant governor of Texas, who, by the way, when he was lieutenant governor, was like in a real battle to fight against gender-neutral bathrooms. Side note, went on to blame, I think now it's abortions in video games. So Ollie North was Ritalin in video games, and then this is the lieutenant governor of Texas.
We have devalued life, whether it's through abortion, whether it's the breakup of families, through violent movies, and particularly violent video games, which now outsell movies and music. Psychologists and psychiatrists will tell you that students are desensitized to violence, may have lost empathy for their victims by watching hours and hours of video violent games. 97%, George, of teenagers, according to psychiatrists and psychologists, watch video games, and 85% of those are violent games. And then, of course, George, we have our schools that are not hard targets.
Okay.
Wait, is he the guy who then went on to blame the number of doors in the school?
Yeah, he was like, there are too many points of entry. Right. It should just be like a prison.
Yeah. The doors thing really puts into perspective how far they will go to blame literally everything other than guns.
Yeah.
And they're literally running out of new vantage points to like come at this issue without tackling the actual issue, which is why I feel like we're getting into like the B-sides of shitty arguments with like Ritalin and then recycling old points. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, yeah, and also that theory that it's the media and video games. And George Stephanopoulos goes on to say, well, that media is available all around the world. These video games are available all around the world, yet this still seems to be a uniquely American problem. Isn't it an access to guns thing? And he was like, abortion, like whatever. So, yes, again, blame everything but the guns. And again, if you want to come for people's video games, then you'll see some people fucking go crazy, my man. Don't come for the games.
Right.
Okay, I'm telling you right now. I love my games. And I'm not, these are not, it's such a sort of dated idea too, because this, that video game media thing has been
studied so hard because people want it to be video games so bad, because people, it's the same way that when comic books came out, you know, there was this governmental commission into comic books and how they were like corrupting the youth. Well, now video games are the new thing. They wanted so bad for video games to be a cause of violence or cause people to be desensitized to violence. And statistics and studies have shown either that there's no correlation or that it's the exact opposite. And basically, by keeping people who have violent urges in their homes doing violence on video games, you actually cut down on actual violence.
It's been like a national initiative to like get that opinion to take for so long. I was, the last time I was home, I found an essay that I had written in the fifth grade where it was like, we were studying in school why video games are bad for you. And like, here's what I learned. I was like, really? We've been doing this for like...
Oh, like your teachers were having you write about that?
Yeah. Like it was like a, it must have been some unit that we were taught, because I found an essay I wrote when I was 10 about why like
video
gun
games
violence
bad.
And video games is bad. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Zeit Gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, how to bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TDZ. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, It's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out What's New on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And we're back, and we wanted to talk about the upcoming meetings between Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Miles, you had some interesting updates for me on this.
I'm reading about
this morning,
and it follows a pattern that Donald Trump really likes, which is spiking the football when you're on the 50-yard line.
Right.
Like you scored the motherfucking touchdown, and you're not even in the red zone, my guy. So look, the past few weeks, he has been pumping up his own little pee-pee talking about, I'm the real peacemaker. I should get a Nobel Prize. You know, these guys are about to fully denuke because of me, blah, blah, blah. And now we're starting to get reports that Donald Trump is kind of starting to get cold feet, because he's worried that this thing could turn into an embarrassment. And there are a couple things to look at why this could possibly seem, again, we talked about how dangerous it was for people with very fragile egos to meet up and begin to make concessions. So first of all, like, you know, when Mike Pompeo had his secret meetings, it seemed like the news came out of there was pretty good, that North Korea was open to completely denuclearizing. And, you know, again, Donald Trump got that football out, started raising his arm. And then John Bolton went on TV and started saying buzzwords like Libya, which are on the no-no list when it comes to North Korea, because that is the exact scenario that Kim Jong-un wants to avoid. Mm-hmm. And then the North Korean chief negotiator was basically kind of making clear, is like, yo, the idea of total denuclearization, probably not going to happen. So that worried Trump to the point that he called President Moon of South Korea and was like, But earlier he said he was going to do that. What's going on? And so that started to add a little bit to his nervousness, because also, as we've said before, that he is so thirsty for like a real political win, like one that even people on the left are like, you know what? Okay, maybe you did pull that off.
Right.
And just in general, he needs something to really hang his toupee on, and he doesn't really have that. So now this is kind of getting a little bit more nervous because of the just desperate need for the optics of him being an effective leader. And then when you add to that also that he knows functionally fuck all about the North Korea nuclear program, it's a little worrying too, because there are a lot of aides writing about how he just is doesn't really understand the complexities of the nuclear program, and that how that could hinder him when he's trying to actually negotiate things, because there's things like, you know, uranium enrichment and plutonium reprocessing and things like that that are vital parts of of making these kinds of deals. And, you know, meanwhile, he was like trying to take credit or just be like, oh, you know, well, they're going to close this one test site, you know, because of the pressure. That was like a site that had like literally collapsed under the sheer like nuclear testing induced earthquakes that was going on. So that really wasn't much of a win. So a lot of these are kind of coming together to sort of create a mood around the White House that Trump is sort of worried that he's not going to be able to do the thing where he flies in on a golden eagle to Singapore, tells Kim Jong-un to, you know, hand over the keys to the nukes, and then he flies back being like, okay, America number one, peace achieved, level 500 leader achievement unlocked. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. These aren't things that he's like actually said, oh, we should cancel it, but these are the grumblings and rumblings around the White House that he's increasingly kind of he's starting to get a little insecure about the meeting.
Well, I think from his point of view, the meeting will go, you know, he'll get there and he'll be like, okay, I will show you my pee-pee, you show me your pee-pee, whoever has bigger pee-pee wins the meeting. Uh-huh. And maybe he's learning, getting some intel that someone has a bigger pee-pee than him.
Yeah, or just is knows how to actually negotiate. Because right. this is like all part of his thing. Like, my God, it's like the same thing with just as an aside is the trade war with China. Like he just announced that he's going to put the trade war, quote, on hold because like some not real concessions the Chinese made. They just sort of like sort of suggested that they may increase purchasing certain crops or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for Trump to be like, OK, let's put the trade war on hold. Meanwhile, the whole entire campaign, he was like, oh, China is screwing us. We are going to really hit them. We are going to punish them. And he has also just completely just sort of caved at the first sign of pressure or whatever. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But this seems like the trend of him being Leon Lett in that fateful Super Bowl match where Don Beebe comes behind him and strips the football from him before he can even get to the end zone.
Right. He's celebrating at the 1 yard line and gets the ball stripped. I feel like it's actually more like that kicker who jumped up to celebrate a like early season field goal and tore his MCL because because it's not it's he had a small success very early in the process and celebrated it and celebrated it so hard that he has now sort of fucked himself in terms of confidence, also just in terms of the leaking. Because this is something that just comes up over and over again when it comes to the coverage of this White House. It's pretty remarkable that the people preparing him for a historic summit with North Korea are just talking open shit about him being like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Right.
And he's scared about that and he's incompetent. What the fuck are we going to do? People who are siding with him seem to think that this is because there's some deep state conspiracy against right. him. Is that more likely, or is it more likely that he treats everyone around him like shit and everyone who is working with him sees up close how incompetent he is and are scared for the future of our country?
No, that's exactly
because
what that is.
The leaking is not a single person who has some agenda. The leaking is just everywhere.
No matter where Trump is, someone's going to be like, you're not going to believe what the fuck this guy just said about
exactly.
this.
Well, that just seems like long game thinking on everyone's part, too, because it's like you want, I mean, hopefully there's someone in the White House who has the better interest of people, although I'm not convinced that's true. But like, you know, like a couple years on when the Trump thing is ideally behind us, they want to be able to be like, well, I said something. Look, remember right. when I leaked something? I said,
oh, that so was you? Oh,
I'm
whoa.
Not. I'm not that bad. I'm complicit, but I'm not bad. You know?
I was that anonymous source.
Oh, right. I was source from this New York Times article.
Like people are going to come back and claim that they were the source like when this nightmare is fucking
over. Well, that's kind of like how those suspicious activity reports that Michael Avenatti got his hands on with Michael Cohen. That was someone at the Treasury Department, I think, or SEC. I forget. Anyway, someone there who was monitoring that gave it to him because he's like felt that some of the activity reports were being like suppressed and not coming out. And they were like, this is fucking bad. And just was like, here, check this out. So I feel like at many levels, there are people who, who have been like lifelong servants of certain departments and are just like, this cannot stand.
Right.
There was a article towards the end of last week. I think it was from the Washington Post. I need to find that and we'll put it in footnotes. But the journalist went and asked these people who are sources on the Trump White House, why do you leak? And what is it like being a leaker in this White House? And it was interesting. The reasons they leak are basically what you would expect.
Right.
They're concerned for the future of the country. And, you know, but then the ways they leak are really interesting, too, because they will study quotes by people who they work with and use vocal tics of the people they work with to cover their tracks to make it seem like they're not the leaker and that the other person might be the leaker.
Wait, what?
They'll look at quotes from somebody and then use
that voice?
That voice, essentially, to give direct quotes to the White House.
What a wild Adam Sandler-y approach to leaking information.
I don't think they do an exact, like, well, you know, I am, it's me, Mike Pence.
It's me, Mr. Mike Pence.
Get off!
The One of the podcasts I was listening to, I think it was the Ringer Weekly podcast with David Shoemaker, where they do a media deep dive. I think they were speculating that this could be somebody who realized they betrayed themselves with a leaking quote, and then were like, yeah, I cover my bases by pretending to be that other guy.
Right. No! Like, wasn't that genius?
Yeah.
God.
So, I don't know. It's an interesting time to
leak culture is fascinating.
Yeah. Right.
Weird hacker culture is fascinating. I think that, you know, we should just, if you're leaking or you're hacking, just visually identify yourself by getting frosty tips and wearing tiny little sunglasses. It'll be way easier for us to break these stories.
But the other amazing thing is that almost a lot of these people who are leaking have to have been put there by the president himself. And this is something that we're also seeing, and I want to move on briefly to the Mueller investigation. We keep seeing the conservative base sort of assuming that people who Trump has appointed, who were hired by him,
right,
given the job by him, are in a vast conspiracy to take him down for reasons that nobody is clear on. I think I've now heard that Mueller is out to get him because Mueller is friends with Comey and he wants to get back at him for that. But it's not clear why Rosenstein is out to get him because Trump hired him and appointed him himself.
Oh, you're saying the sort of conservative people are spinning that, like, these appointees are actually... I thought you were saying that there is this concerted effort.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, the conservative take on this, in order to explain away all of these sourced leaks that are pointing to just vast incompetence and corruption, they're having to formulate this, quote, deep state cover-up,
right,
that is this vast conspiracy that is all out to get him and coordinating to create this narrative. But Trump would have had to hire all these various conspirators on his own and, like, put them in place for that to be true.
Well, yeah, or they just have the complete disregard for the fact that, yeah, many of these people are in positions that were appointees or whatever, or lifelong Republicans. So I guess it's at this point, you know, because the stories get worse and worse, or just the smoke is getting more intense and the coincidences, if you want to call them coincidences, become more and more frequent. It's harder to imagine a version of events that, you know, is completely benign.
Yeah. This weekend, there were revelations that I assumed were going to take the entire country, both the 42% that approves of Trump and the 52% that disapproves of Trump, in the direction of, well, let's see this Mueller thing out. Let's see this Mueller investigation out. But instead, it seems to be a case where things are continuing to, every piece of evidence causes both sides to accelerate in the opposite direction.
Right.
We've talked before about how this is one of the key ingredients for civil war, is when you have two separate sides of the country and everything that each side hears takes them further and further apart.
Right.
And so this morning there was a huge op-ed that is the number one trending article on The Hill that is a former Democratic Party operative named Mark Penn, who is saying it's time to end the Mueller investigation. He basically lays out the argument that I've heard. The conservative argument is fairly consistent against the Mueller investigation, that
right,
it's this deep state thing and that there was never evidence in the first place and never evidence that anybody can point to in concrete terms. And the latest, you know, revelations of meetings at Trump Tower, where Donald Trump Jr. opened the meeting with a Russian Kremlin operative by saying, "I hear you have information for us," that doesn't add any fuel to the suspicion that something might be going on here. And now there's evidence of more conversations that happened at Trump Tower. This new meeting was between the guy who headed up Blackwater,
and Eric Prince, Betsy DeVos's brother.
Yeah, Eric Prince, the just shadiest dude in the world, and an operative from the UAE and Saudi Arabia, this guy George Nader, and a social media expert for a firm which employed several Israeli former intelligence officers, who specialized in collecting information and shaping opinion through social media.
Which is a fancy way of describing social media manipulation campaign.
Yes.
And I literally can't keep all these people. We need like a guess who board for really, these people. I can't keep it straight.
There's not enough red string. There's
right. And it's crazy because there's just this abundance of information that is like, well, that's clearly
right.
The behavior of a guilty person. But anyways, so it is technically illegal for a campaign for a public office in America to work with foreign
money,
powers,
anything, yeah,
foreign people,
exactly.
Foreign money. And these conversations have people saying, you know,
y'all need some cash, basically.
Yeah, like, the social media expert being like, we will, here's our multi-million-dollar proposal to help your father become president.
Yeah.
And just,
right.
Because then he will allow us to continue the fuckery. Yeah, because I'm sure it's a very clear choice. If you're like, do you want a world where Hillary Clinton is the president and is going to try and enforce things? Or some guy who's sleazy and can literally, you can just pull up to Trump Tower and be like, hey, how much you need, man? Because let's work something out.
I do need the people who are, you know, the 52% who are critical of Trump to just be a little bit more focused, because I feel like you're hearing all of the information, just all these different stories. And for instance, there was a story a couple weeks ago where a judge came after Mueller about Manafort and
financial dealings.
How do you justify going after Manafort? It has nothing to do with the case. And that was the last I heard of that story. But apparently they explained their case to the judge and the judge was like, oh, okay, I get it. And
right.
They moved on from that. But that was a key piece of evidence. I think because the 42% that approve of Trump have fewer pieces of evidence. And so they like cling to them and use them more carefully. Whereas the people who actually think there might be something here in the Mueller investigation are just, they're just burning through every new revelation.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's junk food.
They are, right? They are doing the Homeland thing. They got their wall set up with all the red string.
Right.
And yeah. And I think on the other side for conservatives, if there aren't like real indictments or things like that, they're not really paying attention to those kinds of developments, because that's, again, just part of the noise of this witch hunt that they don't care about because nothing happened. It's, you're at the Mueller cookout and you're serving up nothing burgers.
And like then making too much noise around any single story always works, because, yeah, like the 52% that are critical of Trump just get exhausted. Like if you scream in someone's ear about some stuff that's relevant and some stuff that isn't for long enough, it's like you just get, you know, like you get exhausted and don't know. And if you're like me, you lose track of who's who, because there's a new name every 2 seconds and there are people entering the story and people exiting.
Well, we
the
can't
story
accept you to keep up. I mean, you're a woman on the go. You have to do quick, you know, shallow grave burials.
I've got to dig a shallow grave on my way home.
Yeah.
The revolving door of characters you have to keep track of is so complex. And I understand why people get exhausted, but it's also like, yeah, that's what they want.
No, and I think I have too, especially like as we talk about it more and more, and I sort of slowly have just adopted the mentality of kind of like, look, yes, let's investigate this. I can't put all of this faith in this, that this is going to correct everything, because I don't think it will. And also, I don't know if how much political will there is in D.C. to actually do anything to rein this president in.
Right.
At least
right.
Not till the midterms.
Yeah. I think it's partially that because there is less evidence on the side of the 42%, they just have a single argument that they're relying
on.
Hunt. Becomes more coherent and it has the appearance of their argument being more disciplined, whereas the left's case is sort of constantly evolving because there's all this evidence and new stories piling in. I also think it has to do with the fact that we've brought up before on the show, the left doesn't have a single opinion-based outlet that is their clear and obvious, you know, mouthpiece the way that the right does in Fox News. You know, the left is still led by journalistic institutions, and journalistic institutions just have the mission statement of reporting facts, not coming up with a coherent argument one way or another. And I think that also keeps things somewhat scattered.
Because I think also, I mean, even with MSNBC obviously being the most left-leaning, you'll get versions of it, but they don't quite venture into the world of fantasy like Fox does. You know, it's very rah-rah Democrats on MSNBC. And sometimes, you know, people like Lawrence O'Donnell completely overlook things, which I'm whatever. But I think, yeah, I know what you mean. There's nothing that's quite as aggressive as the sort of media machine on the right.
It's a lose-lose because they're like oversimplifying stuff to the point of like fantasy and farce and craziness. And it's like, you don't want that for the left. But what is a way to present, you know, everything you need to know and filter out the noise? Like it's so hard to do.
I think the only way to do it is for everybody to listen to the Daily Zeitgeist.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say. That's what we're here for just really unchecked information.
Yeah. But even on the side of MSNBC.
Grave updates.
Yeah. Even on the side of MSNBC, MSNBC is just another voice in this cacophony of different sources that people on the left pay attention to. Whereas the right, it's like the whole Republican Party has a very disciplined information architecture that is coming down from Fox News, and you know, Fox News's loudest voice speaks to the president every night to like decompress. Mm-hmm. And Fox News was started by Roger Ailes, who was a Republican political operative for Nixon, and was like, there's room for me
for
to create
like
a political machine and, you know, make it a key player in politics.
Well, and I'm pretty sure our podcast is still bigger than the Fox News podcast. So, you know, we're on our way.
Yeah.
Good.
We're going to nail this. yeah. Rush Limbaugh doesn't have shit on us.
Oh, wait, what are you saying?
All right.
Oh, he's been in the room.
Yeah. He's been here the whole time.
Guys, I'm high back here, just nodding off. This show is just fucking
handfuls
puckery.
Of Percocet.
They're Norco. Okay, I only ride the yellow submarine.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too.
So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back, and the big event of the weekend was, not surprisingly, the royal wedding. 29 million people in the U.S. alone watched it, even though it was, you know, 4 in the morning Pacific time.
Oh, crazy.
Even my own mother got up at the crack of dawn to watch them.
What was her review of the
royal texted
wedding?
Me and was like, I posted on Twitter, she was like, oh, you watching your birthday twin's wedding? He's losing his hair, too. My mom is a cold-blooded savage, but you know what? She made me a strong man, because you know when you're just getting torn down like that every day?
By your own mother.
Yeah, honestly, Twitter, they can't do anything to me when that's, I get direct texts from my mother like that. I mean, she loves it. I saw her yesterday, and she's all about the pomp and circumstance, and the fascinators were so fascinating to her. And yeah, then I also had my own moment of just sheer fear when she said, I'm just curious when I will get to go to my royal wedding, which was her putting pressure on me to get married.
Oh,
I was like, wow,
there you go.
Mom. That's the first time, and that was the first time she's ever done in my life. Every time she's so been so chill, she's never been like, you can live your life, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what the fuck happened to my mom. She watched this royal wedding and was like, excuse you. When is my royal? When will I wear a fascinator? I'm like, look, Mom, I'll get you one, and you can just go to Target wearing it, but there ain't going to be no royal wedding.
That is a very ambitious opening bid for what your wedding is going to be like.
I was like, whoa. Wow. You got that kind of money, Mom?
Yeah.
So we might do this at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, if I can afford it. Anyway.
I was awake for the royal wedding. Jamie, you were too?
I was.
And you got up for it? Did you set an alarm?
I set an alarm. I did it. Yeah, I set an alarm, and then I watched, and then I fell asleep, and then I got back up, and they were kissing.
Aww.
It was nice.
The best parts.
It was. I woke up for the best part.
I was awake because of my 11-week-old. I won't lie. I did not do it out of, you know, loyalty to the Zeit gang, but I was up for it.
I think I'm going to say allegiance to the crown.
And the crown. But there were a couple things that I found amazing. One is that they actually do the, if anyone present has any reason these two should not be married, speak now thing in royal weddings, which I've never been to a wedding where they did that. And I thought that was
In
movies?
I thought that was like a rom-com thing.
No, I mean,
I've been to weddings where that
at least
up.
Ones where like the ceremony or is very non like uninventive or not creative. I've heard it there. Unless I'm marrying you, because I am a an ordained minister. And I do yes, I do lit.
You've married people before.
Yeah, shout out to Chris and Shay, shout out to Brittany and Steve, you know, shout out to Amanda and her man. You know what I mean?
Like three times.
Oh, shout out to Mike and Julie. You know what I mean? I've done
four times.
You know what I mean? Yeah. They're all doing well. They'll have children. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to say that I do it right. But yeah, I've only seen that like at like a sort of traditional wedding I went to when I was younger, and then another one in Vegas.
And like a long pause too. Like just
anyone? Harry's ex was there wearing black.
No, really? She was not.
Yes.
For
yes,
real.
She was. And it was the sort of thing where she, I think at the time, he had proposed to her, and she was like, I don't want to be a member of the royal family.
Oh.
So she sort of like, she wanted to like go to law school and have a life.
Right.
And so they broke up, and then he got with Megan, like, and it worked out. But she went to the wedding, and yeah. So I was hoping
that you'd
that
be
I
like,
slept through that part.
I have something to say.
Excuse me.
Wait, so what would happen, I guess, procedural
like,
sense of a wedding, if someone did speak now and didn't forever hold their peace, does that mean you could be like, well, what y'all think? Should we call it off? Like,
right. whose decision?
Let's
would the priest be like, that's a good enough reason, guys. Sorry, I'm calling this
we'll
one.
We'll have to learn. I'm sure someone will hit us on Twitter. Like, they were to correct us about many things that we got wrong or supposedly got wrong.
Yeah, apparently the royal family doesn't get their money from taxes or something. And there was an American princess before. Meghan is not the first.
Retraction.
We said that.
Okay.
So,
but
yeah, I don't
down,
know.
Everybody.
But I'm guessing, like, in terms of, you know, like you were saying, the best man was literally there to fucking fight anybody off at the wedding.
Yeah.
Like what the speak now thing was, like, if there used to be the audience had the power to like nullify the ceremony or something.
And realistically, it's like speak now or statistically wait a couple years.
Yeah.
And then find them on
you got a good
Tinder.
Chance.
Right. There was the pretty amazing performance of Stand By Me by the Kingdom Choir. It was very, I don't know.
What was it about? It just the choral arrangement of it just spoke to you or something?
Yeah, it was.
I cried.
Did you see this the choir part too?
I had to like go back in the highlights, but yeah, I watched it. I cried.
The only thing I saw visually of the wedding were Posh and David Beckham looked like they were also at a funeral. The way they were dressed and they pulled up, I was like, yo, that's swag, though. I fuck with that.
Yeah.
And also, what was it? Was it Pippa Middleton, who everyone's saying flamed her, looked like the can of Arizona iced tea?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that was really also funny. Kind of amazing.
That was a great meme.
But that's like one of those things where only, an American who knows the Arizona can would have been like, ooh, no, Pippa, you don't want to do that. That's the Arizona can.
You're dressed in like the cheapest beverage possible.
A 99-cent high fructose corn syrup bomb.
Yo, get it. Go to CVS on a good week and get 2-for-1. Embarrassing. Oh, embarrassing. Yes.
There was also, what else?
The queen wore a light green skirt with coat and hat combo.
What if she dressed like an Arnold Palmer can?
I lost $1,000 on an Arnold Palmer. just a photographic reprint of Arnold Palmer's smiling
that
face.
Can, yeah, just on it. Ooh, that would have been a wave.
That's a specific mood, yeah.
Who else did I care about that I even saw? Oh, one interesting thing that I read was that at one of the after parties, Serena Williams was wiping the floor with people at beer pong.
Also, awesome.
Now this was reported in The Sun. So again, like I say, take this with an entire can of Morton salt. But they were reporting that in the after party that, yes, she was wiping the floor. Now, the description of beer pong is one of my favorites. They were saying that, this is from The Sun, the bride's U.S. heritage was marked with a boozy American university drinking game, beer pong, where players throw table tennis balls into cups of beers which their opponents then have to consume. That is the most academic description of beer pong. And I just love that when we're like the shitty game of beer pong is written up in such an intelligent way.
This is what cultural appropriation feels like. They're taking our shitty cultural thing and, looking down on it, but celebrating it in a way.
Do you
that
think
like
articulating
fun.
It pretty
Do you
clearly.
Think Serena was like even busting the tricks, like blowing, like if the ball was spinning the cup, like going, like blowing it out or like blocking or like bouncing, you know, whatever.
Depends on if she called no blows, bro.
Right. And then she's like, all right, no, put that diamond, bro. Can you put that into a diamond?
I'm triggered by how much you guys know about beer pong. Truly, truly. Although my podcast co-host, Caitlin Durante, is maybe the best beer pong player I've ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
Yes. She's so good.
Good for her.
One of her many hidden talents, yes.
Now I want to see this. Because I love, I'm terrible at beer pong. Mm-hmm. So I like
I'm
to see
awful.
When people are just like, they've just got the stroke down.
It's always who you least expect too.
Like I would have never suspected Serena Williams would be good at a
sport.
Athletic competitive thing.
I know. I'm surprised. And they're like, and then she also like wrecked everybody in a game of informal soccer or football.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, I wouldn't. Oh. Yeah. Cause she's just such a like prolific athlete.
She can do anything. Yeah.
James Corden apparently started a dance-off that saw
Charles,
William, and Harry take to the dance floor.
Do you think they caught it
with Meghan and her mother? And
what do you think they did? Like, what song was it? I wonder. And was it? Did they whip and nay-nay?
Oh, probably.
James Corden's like, do you want to get in my car outside? Let's just do a quick segment. I'll fight James Corden and win.
He's like so generic, though, and unoffensive. It's just the frequency at which you see him that just angers you to your core.
If I ever see James Corden near a pool,
I'm
pushing him in.
Oh, okay.
I'm pushing him in.
Wow. Just so blast that out right now, James Corden. If you see James alive, it's ugly.
Hope you're not near a pool. No, there's that's just like a personality trait that drives me insane of just like, here's someone who, if they are not seen or paid attention to for 45 seconds, will cause a scene. Like, it's just like, hey, does anybody want to dance with me?
Well, I think he was like sort of informally dubbed like to be the MC, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like, you know, they were like, oh God, get the mic away from James. I think they're like, hey, my man, you're like the god of partying right now, so help us out.
James Corden, let's get the most British boring person we possibly can. And James Corden came in. He's there. I don't know. British Seacrest, I'm not here for it.
Brie Crest.
Yeah. Only thing worse is if Bill Murray trots in.
I'm sure we will find out that he was there in secret, dressed as one of the servers.
Just like jumped behind the bar and was bartending.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So fun. Yeah. And then every like worst person you knew in college will be like, oh my God, Bill Murray's a freaking god, so epic. And you're just like, stop going to places you're not invited.
George Clooney waltzed with both Kate and Megan.
That's the only man who probably could have, you know, everybody would have been like, yo, George Clooney, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you're actually doing me a favor because this is my wife's dream was to dance with you. Right. It's my dream to be with George Clooney at 1.2. I mean, he's so dreamy. Ugh.
He seems so tender.
Do you think he seems tender?
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, he's just living that life out in Italy all the time, in Lake Como, mm-hmm. or Lake Como, or whatever it's called. Bellagio, if you will.
The thing you have to understand about George, though, is he's a real prankster on the set.
Does he have fun on the set?
That's the word.
That's the word around Hollywood.
Every time I see a movie, I'm like, but were they having fun on the set? Because that's what really matters.
Like, have you seen the Wet Hot American Summer documentary?
No.
When they did the re-release on Netflix, they also did a feature length, like not feature length, but a pretty, like a good documentary about the production of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can tell that production was just party time. Like they were all
Prank City?
Prank City, fun times, just, you know, like they were basically at camp together while they were shooting, and it seemed like they had a blast.
Man, that does sound great.
On the other side of that coin, Caddyshack apparently was so, like, epic and outrageous. Yes, I am that friend from college.
Epic.
Epic and outrageous.
Freaking awesome.
A movie? No. Yeah.
Behind Saint Bill?
A set that one of the producers was... Like, they stopped the production, sent him to rehab, and he died of an overdose, like,
oh my God.
After,
whoa,
like, almost immediately shit. After the movie. But everybody was just doing
talk about freaking
loads
fun
and loads
on
of
the
drugs.
Set.
Yeah. Am I right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Usually I just drink a lot of Diet Coke and then go home.
Nah, man, you got to do dangerous amounts of drugs. That's the only way.
The secret to success.
Jamie.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on twitter.com at Jamie Loftus Help. And you can listen to my podcast, The Bechdel Cast with Caitlin Durante, every Thursday.
It is a wonderful podcast. What have you guys covered recently? Actually, we asked Caitlin that. She was our guest on Friday.
Oh, really?
So
oh, okay.
I bet your answer would be very similar.
And also, a lot of people were really interested in this question, the way she answered. Do you and Caitlin actually hang?
Me and Caitlin, yeah, like almost every day.
Yeah. They were loving that because she was like, I asked Caitlin that about you too. She's like, oh, we hang.
Oh, that's
do
sinister.
We fucking hang? Are you serious? She
threw
everything off the desk.
I planned the woman's goddamn surprise party.
I know.
That's why she was hungover on the cast the other day.
Heard it was a Paddington theme.
It was, everyone was supposed to dress as Paddington. And if we were in, I chose maybe the darkest bar possible, so I'm assuming everyone did. I don't know. It didn't really look.
Wouldn't know, though.
There were some red hats.
Okay. That's all you need to know. Yeah. And a duffel coat is another thing I learned. Piece of garment. That's basically the defining coat that Paddington wears.
Why weren't people dressed as Paddington at the royal wedding?
That is a question.
Real marketing oversight.
Because you didn't plan it.
That's true. Every party I plan, people are dressed as Paddington.
Yeah, contact her for weddings, bar mitzvahs, quinceañeras, and debuts.
Miles, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Great.
Great. You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Where
we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode. That is going to do it for today. We also link off to the songs that we ride out on. Miles, what is that going to be today?
Okay, so, you know, I'm really in a J. Dilla mood recently, and there's this one track on Commons Like Water for Chocolate called Heat. And when I first heard it, I was like, yo, I love this track. It's got a really cool drum thing. Do a little digging, find out what the sample is. It's actually a sample of the Tony Allen song called Asico. And Tony Allen is a drummer. He's a drum for Fela Kuti. Just a really dope, just kind of jam song. So this is actually the original song by Tony Allen called Asico. And, you know, if you're a drummer, you like rhythms and stuff, you'll like this track and just enjoy. And if you want to hear this sample flipped in a track, check out Heat by Common. But this is Tony Allen, Asico.
All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. We'll be right back.
Duro de Asico. Asico. 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 O le boju le won we ki won ma fi ya je. O le boju le won o we. O le boju le won we ki won ma fi ya je. O le boju le won o we. they want it, make you want my fia, yeah. Oh, they go to the wrong way. Oh, they go to the wrong way, make you want my fia, yeah.
Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.